Well, okay. My name is Ken Black, and I'm the Deputy Secretary for the Wisconsin Department of Veteran Affairs. And this room looks just like it did, or what rooms looked like when I was in school, and that was that everybody was set to the rear. There will be a test at the end of this. Just kidding. At any rate, welcome to the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is our education center, and we're pleased to have you here with us today. And how many veterans do we have out there in the audience? If you just raise your hand. So I'm proud. Okay, so we do have some veterans out in the audience today, but today is, as I understand it, is designed to, a question and answering period of what's going on with our education system as it pertains to veterans. Just for your information, most of you may know this, but we have a very robust educational benefit-type program here in the Department of Veteran Affairs. There's probably one of five states that have the programs that we offer across the entire United States. I say that because more often than not, when we have something good, we don't recognize it. We've got the Montgomery GI Bill. We've got the Wisconsin GI Bill. We've got the Vet Ed program, and now we got post 9/11. Plenty of opportunities for you to receive dollars to help you acquire your education at both undergrad and graduate level. So, you know, I will tell you again that in 45 other states, they don't have that. So you've got a good opportunity to discuss some good things about what we've got going on here. I know we've got still have some difficulties working our way through post 9/11, but I'm confident that the right people are on top of it and that we will work our way through that. So once again, there's a lot of positive that can come out of this meeting today. I encourage you to look at it from that perspective. And once again, welcome to the Department of Veteran Affairs. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to Dr. Radomski.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll move this over. Great. Thank you, Bo. Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Noel Radomski. I'm the director at WISCAPE, which stands for the Wisconsin Center for the Advancement of Postsecondary Education. I want to thank all of you for coming and also thank the department for allowing us to use their facility here. As you see, our program is called Supporting Student Veteran Success at Madison's Postsecondary Education Institutions. Thanks to Bill Tischler, we also will capture this on audio. And so hopefully if you or your colleagues are interested in listening to this afterwards, we'll have this posted online later. I also want just a quick house cleaning note. This fall, WISCAPE also will be sponsoring on Tuesday, November 17th, a Wisconsin Idea Forum, Innovative Needs for Need-Based Aid in Wisconsin. That will be held at the Pyle Center. And then also on Friday, October 16th, we're going to have Virginia Commonwealth University President Emeritus Eugene Trani provide a lecture titled The Indispensable University, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Economic Development and the Knowledge Economy, which is a chapter he's writing in a book that will be published by the American Council on Education in March of 2010. We also have that information on our website, which is located on the screen. Also, finally, if you haven't been able to do so, we encourage you to write your name and your email address if you'd like, and then we could send you future programming information as well as when we have publications or other information that you might be interested in. Okay, now we can focus on why you're here today. Today's forum will include a panel discussion focusing on the needs of student veterans and institutional responses at three Madison campuses, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Edgewood College, and the Madison Area Technical College, which are a public land-grant university, a private college, and a public two-year college. Representatives from these institutions will discuss the present and future of students' veteran services at their universities. Ultimately, this discussion of veteran services is part of a larger issue, serving student groups with unique needs. I'll give brief intros of the three presenters. First, John Bechtel. John is the Assistant Dean for Veterans and Abundance Services at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, acting as the key point of contact on campus for military service members. John has held this position since September of 2008. Prior to serving as Assistant Dean, John was the Director of the Army ROTC program at the UW-Madison from 04 through 08, as well as a Professor in Military Science Department Chair. John is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel with 21 years of active duty and 3 years of National Guard service. Michael Shumway is the Veterans Services Coordinator at Madison Area Technical College, helping MATC student veteran population find resources and support to improve their college persistence and success. Michael also is spearheading the organization of a Vets for Vets chapter for the MATC Madison campus. He is an electronics technician first class with the United States Navy Reserve. Tammy Kepsel is the Assistant Director for Transfer and Postbaccalaureate Admissions for Edgewood College. She also serves as Edgewood's Veteran Services Coordinator, Edgewood's Veteran Services Office, In addition, several other representatives from Edgewood are in attendance, whom you may also hear from. Today's panel discussion will be followed by a question and answer session. So what we'll do now is we'll open this discussion with some questions that I'll introduce, and we'll allow the panelists to chime in and answer the questions at their leisure. So, with no further ado, here's question number one. What do you see as the biggest challenge facing veterans in higher education today? So again, the question is, what do you see as the biggest challenge facing veterans in higher education today?
Well, first, when you say veteran, I guess I'd clarify that as meaning anyone with prior military service or even those that are currently serving in the Guard or Reserve. Just talking with students on an individual level, I'd say one of the biggest challenges that veterans face is not necessarily academics, but perhaps climatization in the classroom. You know, I introduced to some individuals the president of our student veterans organization on campus, who I think credit-wise he might be a junior or sophomore, but most would mistake him for a TA because they're a little bit older, married with kids, yet they're in sophomore classes. There is a certain amount of frustration that comes with that, and that can detract from their collegiate experience. And so I guess if I had to just pick on an individual basis or individual level, biggest challenge, it's student veterans coming in, particularly from active duty, 4 to 6 years, maybe more, and registering for that class with 200 18-year-old freshmen. There's a certain amount of frustration. But, you know, that's why we have student veterans organizations. They can go and vent there.
I'd agree with John. It's also familiarizing themselves with a varied type of bureaucracy. They're used to the military and paperwork and all the sort of systems that they have to navigate, and they've spent 4, 6, 8 years familiarizing themselves with that. And then they come to an educational institution, and it's a whole different ballgame. So whether it's learning how to apply for their GI Bill, look for funding for tutorial assistance if they're struggling in classes, knowing whom they can go to for counseling or family counseling, the resources that are available either at the schools or in the community, and just knowing how to get all of those pieces put together and getting used to that sort of game, so to speak.
I would agree with all of those. In addition, what we hear is that transferring that military experience into usable credits at the college level, and we do have a process in place at Edgewood that we can translate those into usable credits, but we do hear that that's one of their issues.
What services or programs, in your opinion, do veterans need, specific to your campus? And then perhaps you could add, for example, how did you determine this? And how do you believe you will provide them? So again, what services or programs, from your perspective, do your veterans need? How were you able to determine those? And how do you expect to provide them?
Well, our veteran services program is very new, so we're kind of learning things as we go right now. We've always had veterans at Edgewood, but we've certainly put it up a little notch as far as what we can offer them. We found some of the challenges, just the application process and getting the benefits, getting the word out to the veterans as to what we offer. We don't actually have the resources in the central location that some schools do. So our challenge right now is sort of getting them to know that we're here to help them and that we've got services available and we really want to be there to do what we can for them.
At UW-Madison last fall, I kind of did an assessment of services available to veterans as they arrived on campus. One of the first things I found was that even though there was a question on the standard UW system application, whether or not you served on active duty in the U.S. military, admissions took that into account, and then that's where it ended. After that, it was up to the veteran to figure out, where should I go on campus? Where does this mythical VA certifying official lie that I have to find in order to get my benefits? I'm eligible for some VA medical care. Where do I go for that? You know, it's kind of intimidating to look at the VA hospital on the hill. And so what we instituted this past spring and through the summer was I contacted all the veterans that had applied for admission, both those admitted and denied, offered alternate entry routes, including MATC and Edgewood, into Madison. And those that were admitted, I met with them during orientation. And then we linked them up with a current student who was a member of Vets for Vets and arranged sort of a informal sponsorship program. So I'd say that student organization on campus is critical, particularly a large campus like UW-Madison. You got to have a place where student veterans can go and link up with other student veterans, where they can talk to each other about services available, about getting additional help, not just benefits, but other things. One of my biggest challenges is getting the student veterans that are eligible for accommodations through the McBurney Disability Resource Center down there. I know these veterans go to the VA hospital to get treated for certain ailments, but they won't go to McBurney because disability is in the title. So in order to try and coax them in, I know most veterans suffer from some sort of hearing loss, trying to tease them in with, hey, you can go pick up this little iPod. You can hear the professor in the big lecture hall speak right into the microphone or in the earphones. And then once they're down there, talk about, well, what other things might we help you with? You know, they might suffer from TBI and could be eligible for additional time on tests. Take advantage of that. No, McBurney, I kind of have to challenge him. You know, McBurney is going to give you something you don't deserve, but go get what you do deserve. And so a key to that is getting a few student veterans to do that. And then other student veterans talk to their peers, that's a bigger influence to go down there and take advantage of those services. And then linking them up with key folks. Michael mentioned the bureaucracy. You know, the military is a big bureaucracy too, but there's a different, sense of ownership for individual duties in the military versus, say, at a big campus like UW-Madison. So when students can get frustrated with the fact that someone may not want to help them because, well, yeah, you have a big problem, but it's 12 o'clock now and I'm going on break, they don't understand that. How could you leave? And so just letting them vent a little bit, helping them through that, and all the organizations or the different departments on campus have been very helpful in providing me a single point of contact where I can send student veterans to get a quick, decisive answer. But again, going back, I think having a strong student veteran organization on campus and a place to meet is very important.
No. Excuse me. Our Vets for Vets group at MATC is very new. We've only been working on putting it together for a little bit over the past year and working with UW-Madison, and they've been a big help in kind of helping us look at the most commonly asked for resources on campus. We've sent out a number of surveys to our veteran population of students enrolled, as well as those that have at least applied for classes at MATC, to see what they're looking for, the areas that they feel that they're struggling with at the time that the survey is sent out, which is usually about 3 weeks into classes. And most commonly, a lot of people are saying that they want help trying to get familiarized again with the whole idea of being back in a classroom. And so there's a number of people that are maybe in need of, again, tutoring assistance or just getting comfortable with their writing skills once again. So getting them to look past it as saying that there's a problem with themselves, which is obviously not true. They're very intelligent men and women, and just making them understand that it's completely normal to have a little bit of struggle going back into the classroom after being in the military for their period of active duty or whatnot, and getting them in there connected with a tutor, working out a schedule that works for both the veteran or service member as well as the tutor, so that they can successfully make it through their classes and hopefully get a good enough GPA that they're able to transfer over to Edgewood or UW, because that is a very common goal for a number of the students. They may have an interest in a technical degree and going right into the field after graduating from MATC, but I'd say predominantly most of them want to go to a four-year degree and pursue a bachelor's or higher. So making sure that they can get the grade point average to support that transfer. And John has helped a lot with, as he said, people who apply to UW-Madison maybe don't have the GPA to get right in, coming to MATC and building that up again and showing that they have proven academic success to help them enter into UW or Edgewood. So that's most common.
And don't hesitate to, if I noticed some of you were nodding when other people were saying something, and if you want to add something or subtract. Now, if you want to add something, please go ahead. I mean, we have a little structure, but we're not overly structured. So if you have any other comments that either you'd like to have a little conversation, we're going to go until 1:10. We have a few questions, and then we're going to open it up to the audience. So if there's any other comments or additions, please.
I would just add, with what Michael said, you got Madison, and I know at MATC, and I'm not sure about Edgewood, but kind of a key triad of support, the strongest shape for all the engineering folks out there is a triangle. But getting good help from the certifying official, we're lucky, very lucky at UW-Madison that we have a very proactive VA certifying official, and thank goodness there are people that are able to do this, have the patience to work through two of the slowest databases probably on the face of the earth, which is Veterans Administration, VA-1, and then the student database at UW-Madison, and matching those and cross-checking addresses and credit hours. And so we're very fortunate at Madison to have Linda Strzok, who can do that, a strong student organization where the students can go and meet with their peers and also that student organization serves to educate the rest of the student population. I don't want to degrade that. Often, Vets for Vets on UW-Madison, we have students coming in working on papers, and they're working on paper on the Middle East, and they want some firsthand quotes and experiences to go into their paper. We have a lot of grad student researchers who reach out to Vets for Vets, whether it's a medical research or some sort of cultural research. And then third, it helps to have someone other than the VA certifying official, I think, on campus, and this is where I kind of fall in, to answer all those myriad of other questions and kind of remove that burden. Often I think a lot of the campuses in the UW system rely on the VA certifying official to be one of everything for the veterans. And it's a full-time job to understand all the myriad of benefits and then to expect someone who may or may not have ever served in the military to be able to answer all the other questions. And I see that in some of the other UW schools where they kind of just say, oh, yeah, we have a veterans person. It's her and or him, and he does certifying. And you talk to them, and they don't know anything about the service. But they know the databases, and that's good. But having that some sort of veteran advisor, depending on the size of the campus, I think is very important for students that are deploying, students that want to apply that are currently on active duty somewhere, dependents of active duty members to go to. So. Yeah.
I'd agree with John. It's very important. We couldn't do what we do without the help of the other offices on campus. We have counselors available at our Student Development Center, and they have been a great resource if we have students that can't get over to the VA but have a pressing issue and they just need to get something off their chest. We have two specialized counselors over there that have – one of them has served in the military, and one of them is very familiar with – the whole operations and how it exists. We have people that, obviously, like John said, are VA certifying officials who may not have any military experience, but they know the ins and outs of that system and the nuances of the GI Bill Chapter 31, whatever, and they can reference those paragraphs. And if we don't have our answers in-house, we're not afraid to go out and touch the other schools for their knowledge too, because I mean, we couldn't do this alone. So,
most of you already touched upon this, but I'll ask anyway. Maybe you could elaborate. What role do student organizations play, as well as what role could they play, and how are these organizations treated, and conversely, or how will they be treated? So again, all three of you touched upon it, but if you want to elaborate on the role of student organizations.
Well, I think we probably have the least of that because we're just starting and we're really interested in the Vets for Vets. That's really great information. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say because we would like more information on what you have going on.
Well, Gerald, the big guy in the green shirt right there, is not only the president of our Vets for Vets, but he's also the regional director, I guess the title for Student Veterans of America, which is a nonpartisan student veterans group. Gerald. So he's hard to miss, but he might be someone that can help you at least. And if you have a couple, two or three, that's how it gets started. But you mentioned the role of student veterans organization. Again, I think they're there for other student veterans to meet, but also to bring that experience and culture to the rest of the general student population. I mean, there is a certain – regardless of what service you were in, the military has a certain culture. There are some nuances between, you know, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Army. But, you know, it's a culture based on perseverance – you know, having a sense of humor when the conditions suck the worst, having a positive outlook despite, you know, what seems to be a foregone conclusion. And the students share that among themselves, but they also bring that to the rest of the student population. And it's funny, you mentioned, well, how are they treated? Well, we'll find out tonight when ASM votes whether or not they're going to fund Vets for Vets in the 10-11 school year, so I'll let you know.
Well, all the students are obviously our voices in the classroom. They're the reason why I'm at the school doing what I do, and I'm going to be there to support them. But they also kind of serve as a sounding board, too. If maybe I'm a little off the mark on where I think the school needs to focus some of its efforts on development, they are not shy about giving feedback on whether we're heading in the right direction or completely askew. But they're very much supported on campus at MATC. The student life office, as well as our college president, has been very vocal about the support that they have for the organization and our students with that specialized skill set and unique needs that they come to MATC with. Funding is another area of struggle at our school, as it is at every school. It's something that we're still exploring. We were lucky enough at MATC to be awarded a grant through the American Council on Education, as well as a partnership with Walmart, which gave us a lot of money to kind of build up our veterans resources on campus. So that's a two-year grant that we're working on developing our resources even further at MATC, and it's going to be very exciting over the next years to see how that increases our students' effectiveness and success. So,
thank you. The next question relates to credit for previous training and experiences in the military. I know it's a dicey issue. Anytime we talk about granting previous credit for previous experience or work experience inside or outside the military on most campuses, two-year colleges, four-year universities are very challenging. So that's the context. So if you could talk briefly about whether or not you know whether your campus offers veterans, whether you offer your veterans credit for previous training experience in the military, what you know about the challenges or the opportunities, maybe a little bit about how difficult is it to help those students with that question. Questions about the system within your campus, within your college or university, when your veterans ask questions about credit for previous training and experiences in the military. It's not an easy question to ask, I know. So.
Well, this is one I have some good background on. Great. Because I found out that we have been awarding credit for prior learning since 1978, actually. It's in something originally called the Alternative Routes to Credit Program. And the current policy is we award credit for military courses and military occupations if the courses and occupations are recommended for credit from the American Council on Education, and if Edgewood has a similar course or discipline. And those credits can be come in as electives only. They do not take the place of any gen eds or actual courses for a program. But we do have a number of people. We get the transcripts from the military transcripts, and we do award credit. And basically, they send in their transcripts just like they do with any other transcripts that they'll be sending in, and they're evaluated.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. UW-Madison, this is an interesting question. It starts off with, if you've completed basic training, you can get 6 general education credit hours. To receive those credit hours, you are required to go to any one of the 3 ROTC units on campus, and they review your service record and can grant those credit hours in a letter to admission. After that initial 6 credit hours, the difficulty level greatly increases. The credits from the Community College of the Air Force, which is a 2-year accredited college, no credits are given toward for any courses completed from there other than possibly some physical education courses. Military occupational specialties, no credit is given for any of that training. In talking with admissions, and this is, you know, one of those things I've been working on, they will look at individual courses that the service member may have taken, and if it resembles a course offered on UW-Madison, they will consider it for credit and replacing that and getting credit for that particular course. The legwork for doing that then lies with me and the service member. And so if they have credit hours that they want to try and get some, you know, some hours and transfer through admission, they can meet with me, and I will pick out some things that, you know, we can make an argument, basically do the research. So other than that 6 credit hours, UW-Madison doesn't really go beyond that except case-by-case basis, course-by-course basis.
At METC, it's very similar to, as John said, you get a very small amount of credit hours transferred in from your SMART or Army or Air Force transcripts, and that's for basic training. There's no credit granted automatically for your military occupational schools or NECC credits. As of right now, you can submit your transcripts to the center offices for evaluation by those department chairpersons or deans, but it does involve a lot of legwork, and then it's based on, is there a course that's very similar to the course that you've taken in the military offered at that institution, and if so, how many credits are we going to give you for completing that course? It's an area of opportunity definitely at METC and one that we're looking to explore further as we move ahead.
Yeah, the next question is about the Yellow Ribbon Program. Some colleges have elected to become members, others have not. So the question is, does your institution participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program? Why or why not? How was a decision made? Any comments about the future as relates to that question and your institution?
I know you want to answer this first because you do it.
We do take part in the Yellow Ribbon Program. We're pretty excited. We were the first private school to announce that we were going to back the program with also our Eagle Grant, which is Edgewood's way of paying for the part of tuition that is not covered by the Yellow Ribbon Program. So basically it would be tuition free for those qualifying for Yellow Ribbon. Dan Carey, who is the Edgewood College president, is a Vietnam vet, and I talked to him prior to coming here, and he was the first in his family to attend college, and he did his master's and doctorate program through the GI Bill, which he's really proud of and very excited about. So as he said, it just made sense to provide this, and he was pretty excited that we could.
METC does not participate in Yellow Ribbon, but there's a good reason for it. It's because our courses are all far under the maximum in-state tuition per credit, and which is when the Yellow Ribbon program really comes into play. That being said, our GI bills as they exist now will fully cover tuition, as well as in some cases the fees charged for those courses or programs to each student. So it's not something that is needed for students that are seeking to pursue their education at METC first, but definitely is something that we promote when speaking of transfer options to Edgewood College, and we always make note of their participation in that program because it is so crucial for students looking to transfer there.
UW-Madison does not participate in the Yellow Ribbon program, and that decision was made at the upper levels, but my recommendation on that, and I work closely with the registrar's office on that and the bursar's office. First off, the UW system offices did their homework when it came time to determine how much per credit hour the post 9/11 GI Bill would reimburse students. I want to say we're about the third highest. We're pretty high up there based on a real expensive program up in Oshkosh, which is great. But because of that reimbursement level, even an out-of-state undergraduate student who takes at least 16 credit hours will have their full tuition covered. So the there's still going to be some benefit there for undergraduates, but even most of the graduate level courses, with the exception of some of them, like the medical school and some of the other medical programs, that tuition cap is still going to cover those higher tuition levels. So, in working with the registrar's office, we made a determination. First of all, some of you may have heard that the UW system, as with most state agencies, needs some money. Conditions were not great to go to the administration and say, hey, we need to pay some money into this program. We know you've been getting about 10 cents on the dollar for the Wisconsin GI Bill, where here's another great way to spend some more money. So instead, with the new state requirement that individuals who have been collecting Wisconsin GI Bill but are also eligible for post 9/11 with less than 12 months remaining more than 12 months remaining on the if they're using Chapter 30 in the Wisconsin GI Bill, those individuals are going to have to change to post 9/11, which is going to bring more money directly into the school. We figure we're going to have a much better chance of success this coming spring if we can show that the UW-Madison has received more actual dollars due to the new post 9/11 GI Bill, and that these particular schools, again, we target some schools, perhaps can consider using or participating in the Yellow Ribbon program. It doesn't have to be the entire institution. So some of those, particularly graduate programs, that post 9/11 won't cover, if we target those particular programs to make up that difference with the Yellow Ribbon, I think that's going to be a higher payoff. Because like I said, even an out-of-state student can get their tuition covered if they take, maybe they take 14 hard credit hours and then they take a couple of weightlifting classes. They can still get it all covered. So that's really our mindset, is rather than just going forward with an emotional argument that we need to participate in this program, let's wait, get some data, show how with Chapter 33 the school is receiving more money, and then target particular programs to really, will you participate, like the medical school?
The reason why we ask that question is because you need to contextualize from a WISCAPE perspective. Edgewood is a private college, has certain policies, tuition charges, financial aid programs, UW-Madison, MATC. So that's why we were curious how the institutions were wrestling with that policy question. The next question is related to how the three campuses have been preparing for the potential influx of veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan in the coming years. So the question is, what, if any, plan, either formal or informal type of plan or preparations have been made to deal with what could be additional students this semester, next semester, next fall? Perhaps a sub-question to that is there a belief that there may be a large or a small influx? What's your best prediction? What are you seeing so far early in this semester?
At MATC, as of this semester, we've already noticed a spike of nearly double the enrollment of student veterans, and we expect that to grow significantly over the next coming years. It's something that was not unexpected. Obviously, everyone anticipated this, and we've been taking measures to increase our available resources and connections with local and federal and state agencies to support our student veterans as they come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, elsewhere, to restart their education at MATC. So when we were lucky enough to be awarded the grant proposal through American Council on Education, we laid all of those pieces out against a timeline, how we were going to increase the success for those students over the next 2 years, which is about the same timeline we're expecting to see continuous gains in student veteran enrollment at the campus?
We didn't really UW-Madison, I mean, the entrance standards are still pretty rigorous. And talking to a lot of students that are denied admission, you know, basically they after high school they go in the service, they do 4, 6, 8 years. They get out, they have a lot of self-confidence, they're ready to go to work. But when it comes to admission, they're relying on those high school transcripts, you know, the B-minus that they got in algebra, et cetera. So what I do is I recommend to them, they look at a myriad of transfer agreements we have with UW colleges, a number of the four-year UW system schools. If they want to, you know, live the Madison school, you know, the Madison student life, look at MATC, look at Edgewood College. And then once they establish a good GPA, then transfer in. So I really expect, although UW-Madison has shown a steady increase over the past years, and even this year, again, a slight increase, I would expect to see a big bubble at UW-Madison here in about 2 years, because a lot of the students I talk to, the end state is a four-year degree from Madison, and they know that they're going to do 1 or 2 years somewhere else, and then they're going to come in here to Madison, which I think is great. But we do expect to see a big increase in about 2 years.
I think we saw a little bit of an increase in the fall. What we're really hoping for is to get the word out about the Yellow Ribbon program so that everybody is aware that that's a great opportunity. And we now have a website, so we're pretty happy about that. So, you know, we're taking baby steps, and we're hoping that maybe things like this and with my colleagues here that we will be getting more people aware of what we have to offer.
I have one final question for the panel, and then I'd like to give you advance notice that we'll take questions. So draft your questions now if you haven't done so already. And this is a question that we didn't give you, and this is it's a softball question, so don't worry about it. And this is a self-interested question from as director of WISCAPE. So my colleagues and I were chatting over the last couple months as we were talking with you, consulting with your institutions about participating. And the question we had were included, what type of research questions would you want centers like WISCAPE and other institutes and centers across the United States who look at issues related to post-secondary education, what type of research questions or what type of environmental scans would you be interested in, meaning what type of policies and practices would you want someone to investigate to help you do your job and help you serve your veterans on your campuses? So it's a self-interested question from our point. If you have any advice for us before we turn to the audience to ask you any additional questions, what advice do you have for us on research that we could pursue?
Well, that's a good question.
I'd like to see, first of all, retention rates in school, and if there's a methodology to be able to track, you know, why students decide to leave school. A concern I always have right now, UW-Madison has about 30 students deployed, is getting those students back in school. And something we've started doing with this latest deployment at 32nd Brigade is when we know a student's been mobilized and is going to be deployed for a year, the registrar's office keeps their account open so we can continue to communicate on there, and they continue to use their school email. So this Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, is still on their mind. And then when it comes time, hey, we think you're getting back this time, so you should be thinking about reentering this semester. What classes are you talking about registering for? And I kind of hound on them about that because I want to get them back in school. Retention rates of the veterans, also contributions of the veterans on campus, and I'm just trying to think of how to categorize that, perhaps in the student body government, and I'm not saying I have any designs on student veterans taking over the ASM. Be nice, so we'll talk again in 4 years, but, you know, and also contributions in the classroom. I think the student veterans, and there may be a way to capture that from some of the professors, but bring a lot to the classroom, and we've seen an increase of those kind of requests from faculty members not just on political science classes, but also cultural type classes, where they bring in student veterans and say, okay, you're given a couple, you know, some 12-hour classes on the culture in Afghanistan, and then you were put down in the middle of it. Tell the students, we've been talking about their culture in the, you know, in the Stan Brother countries. Tell us what you ran into. And, you know, fellow students saying, well, this is, you know, things that, you know, we had to learn to treat females like this and males like this, and you have to get over certain things. Add a lot to the classroom and capturing some of that from the professors, I'd like to see.
Yeah, I think that it would be interesting to see for our students at MATC after they graduate or transfer the success rate of completion of their degrees at the other UW system schools or the private colleges such as Edgewood. And then if they pursue degrees after that, a master's or higher degrees, and then just what they've done and how the roles that they've played in the military have guided them or maybe made them reevaluate their career choices after leaving or separating the service.
I think I would ask, how do they want to see themselves integrated into the institution? I know everybody is individual and everybody's going to be doing that in their own way, but that's something that we've talked about in our meetings, is not everybody wants to be put on the spot like, oh, you're a veteran and you need to know all these things. And so how could we make that transition easier? And of course, navigating the process, I think, is always a good question. It sounds like it's, I mean, just the things that I know at this point, it's a lot to know and it's a lot to get through. And so any way we could make that easier would be great.
Okay, now the burden's on you. Oh, great, there are questions. I get to play the rolling, whatever. We'll start with this man with the Green Bay Packer shirt. And I've got to hold the mic because otherwise people might run away with it.
That works.
Nothing personal.
As John's already introduced me, I'm Gerald with Vets for Vets at Madison. I am a student here. One question, it's particularly timely this week. The backlog of VA claims and the new post-9/11 GI Bill. A lot of people their claims aren't processed yet. Is there anything your schools are doing, and if so, what, to help alleviate the burden of waiting for our money to come through?
Great. Thank you.
That's a question you too.
You know, I read that in the paper. The person that I would contact for that was out this week, so I couldn't find out what, if we're having trouble with that, or so I don't have a great answer for that right now.
excuse me. There is quite a few students at MATC that have expressed concern over this, and you've probably read about it in the paper too, in the Badger Herald, if you read that at all. But there's a number of resources at MATC. We've partnered with our counselors in the Student Development Center, and through the MATC Foundation, which is a nonprofit institution within MATC, there is the capability to distribute grants to these students if need is determined to be met, as well as emergency loans, because the backlog is notable and we haven't exactly been given a for sure answer on when that'll be at a zero balance, when everyone will have their certificate in hand and their money is distributed to their accounts. So we've looked at that. Also, there's students, unfortunately, that have mortgage payments as well as possibly rent issues with their landlords, and working with their landlords and mortgage holders to communicate exactly what's going on with the VA process right now, and that, in fact, these students will be eligible at X dollar amount per month, but that there's, unfortunately, a little bit of a hold in the processing time right now. And we've been lucky and very fortunate to have that communication and receptive mortgage and landlord holders, so that we haven't had, knock on wood, any students evicted from their place of residency. If it comes to be near the time for registration or tuition being due at MATC, November timeframe, we've already identified that we're going to be able to temporarily remove those holds on the students' account so that they can, in fact, register for classes for the upcoming term, as well as not have late fees applied to their account or have them handed over to collection agencies. So we're looking out ahead and trying to be as proactive as possible to help out the students.
Okay. No student in Madison that we know is going to be receiving benefits in form of tuition payment to the school is penalized in any way. In fact, their accounts are manipulated in such a manner that if they are otherwise eligible for financial aid but simply waiting for that tuition payment to come in from the VA, that they can still get their financial aid. Whether or not all that is legal, I don't know, but Michelle Kelly from the Registrar's Office is sitting right there, and she's the one that's doing the handiwork. As far as living expenses were, like Michael mentioned, they're supposed to get a basic allowance for housing, part of the post-9/11. Financial aid, I know, is working with them to get them some no-interest loans, and then also the Dean of Students Office, we offer a no-interest loan. In fact, I just gave one out the other day to a student who he applied late. He's in this big bubble of applications the VA is working through right now. So we're definitely working with students. And I don't know of any student who is being kicked out or is considering dropping out of school. And they definitely should not.
Yeah. We have always encouraged our students to also apply for financial aid ever since summertime, when we saw that there might be an issue with the number of applications going into the St. Louis Regional Office for Chapter 33, the post-9/11 GI Bill, encouraged those students to apply for financial aid, and having workshops on a regular basis to walk them through the process so that they're not scared away by the 24 pages of application online. And we've been pretty lucky, too, having a lot of very knowledgeable people in our financial aid department that are very interested in helping out our students in that manner as well.
Additional question back here.
My question is kind of along the same lines, but more specific. I simply need to know the simple answer of time and location. How long before a student gives you their certificate of eligibility, where, Colonel, you mentioned about the certifying officials, the people who certify, how long before you get your paper in hand that the student is certified, how long does that take? And the second part of the question is, those certifying officials who go online and certify these veterans, where and what kind of training do they get? So I want to know, how long does it take when you have the certificate of eligibility in your hands that the student gets certified, and where do these people get their training? What kind of training do they have?
Well, I don't think I can answer the question on the training. I think I would ask specifically the certifying official. I don't want to, unless there's someone back there, Joe Bertland might be able to answer that. As far as the certificate of eligibility, if they have that in hand, okay, we know we're going to get the tuition money, so they're never going to see any penalty or anything from the tuition. Whether or not the VA has paid the school yet or not, that's not the student's concern. That's now between the school and the VA. As far as when they receive the BAH payment from after school starts, no, you're not asking about that. Okay.
Once you get the certificate, The certifying official has to certify the student.
Right.
The student may or may not get an email saying that they're certified. From the moment I give you the certificate, How long does it take for the student to get certified? Oh. Past that, I know the VA has time to pay their money. I'm asking, how long does it take? I give you the certificate. How long does it take for a student to get certified?
A matter of days. Once we have that, yes.
At MATC, we actually we certify a lot of times right now before we get that certification from the VA because of the giant backlog with 33 and the other new applicants. So we certify in advance, and then we just hope that when the VA gets their processing done, that meets up. We've already got all of our students certified for fall as of over 2 weeks ago now. So we're just waiting for the VA's processing time to meet up with the schools.
Michelle. Madison does that as well. We certify before we get the official certificate of eligibility.
Okay. One additional question?
Another training, Joe Bertland back there might be able to answer that. The training for a certifying official?
Edgewood, how long does it take?
Days. As long as you're an admitted student, yeah.
An additional question, and perhaps afterwards, there's a person back here who can chat. Okay, thank you. Next question.
Okay, I have a question. Being a graduate of Defense Language Institute, most colleges require languages for your degrees. I can't see why any university system or college system would not grant credits for DLI, Defense Language Institute. Just the German course is 32 weeks long, 6 hours a day. That's all you do. I think Russian is 48 weeks. Arabic, I think, is longer. So I couldn't, you know.
Madison will accept up to 16 credit hours from the Defense Language Institute. What they won't necessarily accept is language training. If a unit's going to be deploying, they get a couple weeks of language training and then get sent off. They won't accept that, but they will do accept DLI credits.
At MATC, honestly, we haven't had a lot of students with DLI training come in. But, again, having that very long course on your record, we would be able to process that and have it added to your official degree on it. So,
I don't know that we don't. I could find that out, though, and let you know.
Now, I'm a graduate from DLI. When I went to get my degree while I was on active duty, they gave me credit for the German language, even though it's my mother tongue also. You know, figure that one out. Then I do have one more question, and I think that you can hear me back there, is, and you hear a lot about this, is PTSD with our veterans, and for either combat or military sexual trauma. I'm also the Women's Veterans Coordinator for the state. So what are you prepared for those things at the schools?
We've had joint meetings. I brought together the outreach coordinator for OIF, OEF veterans from the VA hospital, the head of the Madison Veterans Center, which is falls sort of underneath the VA hospital system, but treats – the only thing they don't do is hand out prescriptions, but it's a counseling center for combat veterans and their spouses or family members. And our university health counseling center on campus. And we had an initial meeting last fall, a couple of follow-up meetings, and since then I'm happy to say that they are driving on without me. And we have some key counselors in our University Health Center that go over to the Veterans Center, the Vet Center, meet with them, and also in communication with mental health. Of course, you get into FERPA issues. But that's why we have this personal link up now, so that if someone is being seen at one location without sharing too much info, they can call somebody that they know at another location. Oh, by the way, the student over here, you may want to talk to him. Outreach, you know, send him an email, ask him to drop by and just talk to you. There has been no general faculty training on PTSD. I have talking with some faculty members about that, and that's if anyone has any ideas on strategy,
trainer, I can recommend you.
Yeah.
So okay. We can talk afterwards, sir.
Great. Thank you.
I know at MATC that the faculty is talked to about the signs, symptoms, and what to expect as classic clinical presentations of PTSD and things of that nature. Through our formal convocations as well as through communications from our professional counseling center on campus. We do a lot of the same measures, as John said, at the UW, partnering with the VA hospital as well as the Madison Vet Center, bringing them on campus so that our students can be introduced to those counselors and they're not afraid of reaching out and touching them when they do need help. But we're lucky enough, again, to have two counselors at MATC with military experience. So it's very essential a lot of the time, I've noticed, to have counselors that can relate to that unique experience so that you don't walk into a counselor trying to talk about your issues with PTSD to someone who has only read about it in a textbook, and not actually experienced it themselves. So that's how we're approaching it right now.
counseling area has, I know they've done training in this area, but I'd be interested in finding out about your additional training.
Colonel Russ, she's a combat stress officer for the 88th RSC. Excellent. She's come to every one of my conferences. I've had 3 women veterans conferences now, and she presents every one of them.
And what's her name?
Lieutenant, I'll get you the information when other questions are done.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any additional questions from the audience? Yes.
I'm just wondering if your institutions, if you know if you've received any actual payments from the VA for Chapter 33 tuition and fees? Or you may not know.
I don't.
Okay.
At MATC, we've received only 2 certificates of eligibility for Chapter 33, but I haven't seen any disbursement under that as of right now out of all the applicants so far. But I'm always asking them because I'm curious as well, because unless I go in there and look at their specific file on VA once, I won't know if they got paid for 33 or not. Okay.
And we have a lot of certificates of eligibility in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, vast majority, I think we have 85 or so students now who have applied, and probably 75 of them we have certificates of eligibility for.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we often hear that it's frustrating that there's no way really to check on the student's application, either through VONAP, which is the application used to apply for GI Bill benefits, education, or otherwise, as well as even if they call over the telephone and can actually speak to someone, which is increasingly harder to do, a way to get an estimate as to how long it'll take before they receive something in the mail. And I always just receive the same stock answer of 6 to 8 weeks processing time, and that's about it. They can't tell me any more or less, and they tell the students the same thing. So kind of stuck on that right now, but hopefully we'll be seeing an increased number of certificates coming in. It's a good sign that you've received a large number already. So,
2 additional questions in the back.
It's Michelle Curtis. I'm with the Financial Aid Office at UW-Madison, and it's not so much a question, but for everyone here, there's been a major change in how veterans' benefits are treated with regards to financial aid. And so I'd heard the gentleman from MATC say you'd encourage students to apply for aid this year. And for the first time since July, all of the veterans' benefits are discounted. They are not included when calculating someone's eligibility for their financial aid. And so they absolutely, every veteran you know who's going to school should be applying for financial aid, because it's all it's all extra gravy, essentially. Mm-hmm. So just if you know anybody, make sure that they know that, because it's been the old way was that people who were active duty would get TA. Now if you're active duty, things are just a tad different, but there's just a lot of misperceptions out there of what used to be the rules, and they changed in July. So
thank you for the comment. Joe?
As far as the Yellow Ribbon program goes, we didn't really talk about this, and maybe it'd be helpful for some of you who are analyzing what we're talking about. The Yellow Ribbon program, the maximum fee paid was $663 per credit hour. So when John said that everything at the UW is covered, it meant that everything was charged at a rate less than $663. And of course, what Michael was saying at the MATC, their tuition is far below that. Then for fees, the amount was $30,979, which was associated with an aviation mechanics course at one of the tech colleges. And there's no public program in the state of Wisconsin that has fees higher than $30,979 per semester. So that's why the Yellow Ribbon really wasn't necessary for many of the public school programs. The private schools would probably have used it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Additional questions?
Thank you.
Oh, no. Not from within.
Not from within. I was just wondering if you could give us a sense of how many veterans are on your campus and sort of a general number. I think we talk about it. I'm imagining there's quite a difference between the institutions. It's an easy question.
Yeah, sure. At MATC, we're still going through right now near the one-month point into the semester to evaluate how many students are still enrolled in courses. And our best estimate at this point, without having that completed, is right around 847 for this semester. So I think we started out with about 900, and we're still going through and checking those, but quite high.
Madison, we have a little over 600 self-reported student veterans on their applications. I want to say, well, we have about 480 getting benefits right now. And that delta is due to we have some veterans on campus who have already used their benefits. I've gone through and contacted most of those. And there are a few that were eligible for, like the Wisconsin GI Bill. They just figured it was some federal program, and they were, boy, that makes my day when I can say, hey, you know what? You can get your tuition paid. Holy, I mean, I'll use a word, but you got to be kidding me. Yeah. And it's a retroactive. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Let me give you Joe Bertland's home phone number. You know, occasionally we stumble. So there is a difference there. But about a little over 600 veterans on campus.
And at Edgewood, prior to this semester, we had 30 on campus enrolled. So...
Real quick, I just want to say a quick thank you to Dr. Betsy Boerhorst, who's the, I always forget titles, president?
President.
I serve on her board. from MATC, Madison Area Technical College. So I just wanted to a quick
thank
personal
you.
Thank you for,
thank you.
For coming.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the audience? Okay, seeing none, what I want to do quickly, I want to thank Tammy, John, Michael for an engaging conversation. Thank you very much. I want to thank Bill Tischler for all his work, and Bo did a lot of the background work on this particular program. So Bo, thank you, and Nick and Beth, and also a final thank you to the Department of Veterans Affairs for hosting this program. So thank you very much, everyone.
I'll send you there, Mike. And, just.